On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. I am Ron Van Dam. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. This is a special edition. Usually don't do a show on a Sunday, but this is an interview special. These are interviews that we had done very recently within the past few weeks, but never had time to air them. They are basically medical and informational segments, which I'm sure many of you will find quite fascinating. And that's what the show is comprised of. It's extra. It doesn't count. Okay? It doesn't count. It's an extra little gift if this is what you want to hear. So that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to get to our first interview. Here we go. Dan Schachner joins us now. He's a pet advocate and puppy bowl referee. So that's you, huh? Okay.
That's me. I'm the guy.
All right. It's a tough job, man. Okay. Now, this is actually, every dog has its day. This is October 22nd is National Make a Dog's Day. What happens on that day?
You know, National Make a Dog's Day, first of all, let me begin. In my world, every day is National Dog's Day.
Of course.
And that's true for a lot of people. But it's a national day of recognition that's also a day of effort to try to get those what they call last to adopt dogs finally adopted. And by that, I'm referring to the dogs that might have special needs, mm-hmm. that might be senior dogs that have languished in shelters for a long time. You know, they might have some condition that makes them a little bit trickier to get adopted. And so it's Subaru's nationwide effort to get those guys recognition and finally adopted. And they're asking for our help.
That's a great thing. I personally love to go to shelters when I'm in the market. Because that way you can interact with the dog. You can see the dog and form a connection. And I like that.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people ask, especially when I do puppy bowl, they say, well, how can I adopt one of those dogs? Yeah. And I say, well, the first thing you can do is go to your local shelter before you even look, you know, on your TV. Just look in your own backyard. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed you, wherever you are in this country, you are near a local shelter that needs help.
Yep.
And that's what National Make a Dog's Day is all about, just connecting with them and doing whatever you can. If you can't adopt, you can foster. If you can't foster, hey, maybe you can volunteer.
Cool. It's better than having kids. I said that. You didn't. Okay.
It's a little cheaper, too.
A little cheaper. Well, that goes without saying. We have formed a new connection with our pets and our dogs because of what's going on. I don't think there's been a closer connection between a human and animal since ever.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful, and that's a cause to celebrate. And it's also a time to recognize that bond. Even if you have a pet in your home, it's also a day for that, isn't it?
That's right, Ron. You know, even if you have a pet in your home, first off, what you mentioned about, you know, these last few months, yeah. and what's going on in the world, the phrase I keep hearing is dogs are winning, meaning that they've got, yes. their humans who, yes. they wanted home,
yes.
You know, home all the time. So in their life, in their eyes, the world is great right now.
Right.
So if you've got a dog at home already and you've been bonding with, and you don't have, say, time or room, energy, money to take in a second dog, that's completely understandable. You can still use your power as an advocate, mm-hmm. to get the word out. So if, as you mentioned, you're going to your local shelter, or you're just sort of scanning their Instagram page to see who's up for adoption, if someone catches your eye and you can't actually house them, no problem. Mm-hmm. You can get the word out for that dog. All it requires is a simple, you know, social media post, whatever your preferred form of social media is. You could do it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, just as an email. Say, hey, this is a senior dachshund that I saw in my local shelter. He's been in the shelter for a year and a half. He really needs a good home. If you know anybody, spread the word. And that's what we're talking about making the dog's day. If you can't physically do it, you can at least do it virtually,
right.
too.
Right. This is interesting because I cannot have my wife go near a shelter. She will come home with every dog. And I think that's the case for most people. And that's how captivating it is. I wouldn't say it's the opposite of what you're saying, but people actually have to be real careful because they will come home with the dogs because it is such a compelling, wonderful experience to bond with these animals and to understand what situation they are in. If you're a human and you have emotions, it's like, it's right there.
Yeah. It's very hard to turn a blind eye to that. You know, in your case, Ron, or other people where they have somebody, a family member or themselves who's just, you know, compelled to want to adopt as many as possible, you know, there's a relatively easy fix to that. They can volunteer, they can just sign up, you know, at your local shelter to volunteer, say once a week, twice a week, and really get their fill of the dogs there physically in their space. That's a tremendous way to help too, in a way you could help make a dog's day as well.
Wonderful. So where would we go for more information? I assume I know where to go physically, but what if I want to read up on this?
Right. Yeah, well, in addition to your shelter, you can check out your local, no joke, your Subaru realtor, dealership, because the Subaru dealerships are partnered with local shelters in your area, about 534 all over the country, in fact. And this all month, they're actually going to support you if you adopt a dog. If you adopt a dog, they'll donate money to a shelter, which is great. But you can go to Subaru.com/make-a-dogs-day, and you'll meet the underdogs, and these are the special needs dogs in the world that might need a little extra help, and you can meet them, get to know them, and you can get some great tips and tricks for how to make your dog's day special, because we all know they deserve it.
Great. I love it when big companies like Subaru get behind something that is really, really a good thing and lend their popularity to spreading the word. I think that's wonderful.
100%.
Yeah.
Me too.
Wonderful.
Same here, Ron. And thanks for your support on this as well. It's an important initiative. We're glad to have your support.
Wonderful. Dan, thank you so much. Joseph Boland is VP of Mission for Catholic Extension. This is interesting. There's an event that you're holding. We'll call it an event. Tell me about this.
It is. It's a virtual event that we're holding at the border. We, Catholic Extension, the organization I represent, is a papal society here in the United States. And Pope Francis has been constantly calling attention to the issue of migration, that it's one of central importance, that it's one of great concern to people of faith and to everybody, because it's a matter of human dignity and human life. And so we've been supporting many Catholic faith communities across the U.S.-Mexico border for over 115 years. And one of those organizations, the Kino Border Initiative, which is on the border of Nogales, Arizona, and Sonora, Mexico, Nogales, Sonora, invited us to create an act of prayer across the 2,000-mile border in solidarity with migrant children who are going to be seeking asylum at the border gate live. During this event that we're holding next week.
Yeah, you know, time has passed and many people forget years ago the despicable display by the administration over this particular subject and what occurred down there. Unfortunately, it hasn't been brought to the forefront again since, unless it's been through an advocacy group such as yours. So is this an annual occurrence?
It's actually a monthly occurrence for right now. And the reason why it's monthly and the significance of the date on which we're holding it, which is going to be October 21st, is that this is the time each month when the current administration renews its ban, its near total ban on asylum seeking.
Gotcha.
Which has left so many people abandoned and in danger on the Mexican side of the border. And so that's why these events started up a couple of months ago, and they've been gradually gaining momentum. And I think we'll continue to see events like this to do precisely what you just said, is to help raise awareness for an issue that for many people has been largely forgotten, but it's one of, we believe, central importance.
Yeah. Shouldn't be forgotten at all. It was It's the most embarrassing thing this country has done in my memory of life here on this planet. How is this actually being? What would we see when we go to the streaming event? What would be happening actually?
Yeah. So this event, which is going to take place at 1 p.m. Central on October the 21st.
Okay.
What you will see is literally people standing on the Mexican side of the border at the gate, a group of children and people congregating, going to the border gate, going a group of children whose lives are in danger, going to a immigration official and asking for asylum, likely to be denied.
Right.
But in the midst of all of that, we are going to have faith leaders from across the border, literally going from Matamoros all the way down to Tijuana, joining their hearts virtually in prayer. And there's going to be a live stream video of them literally singing songs, serenading the children and praying for them and reminding them that they're not forgotten. And we are told by the organizers that actually work with these children that even though they're denied, that they're likely to be denied asylum, the very act of people coming together, reminding them that they're not forgotten and people care, is a gesture that goes a very long way for them in knowing that they're not alone in this.
What happens on the American side of the border when this is taking place?
So many of our Catholic faith leaders will be on the American side of the border gathering. They're the ones who are going to be, you know, offering these prayers and songs.
Good. Okay.
So kind of speaking over the river, speaking through the wall, as it were, you know, these words of encouragement. And then we as Catholic Extension are going to be gathering people from across the country, you know, to join in this live stream. So we hope that there'll be hundreds, if not thousands, of people joining us live. And if they miss it live, they'll have an opportunity to see it play thereafter on our website. Good. Or if they're so moved, they could also visit Catholic Extension's website and read about groups that are doing excellent work with in protecting asylum seekers right now, and they can actually give a donation to support them.
Good. What do the border guards do during this period of time? They just stand in the middle, or what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, they adhere to the policies that are handed down to them, and that's what we know. And so this has been something that is has been, and slowly there's been a whole slate of policies that have come down the pipeline, unfortunately, in the past couple of years, each of which have, you know, made the process more stringent. At the beginning of it, a couple of years ago, it was literally just blocking the gate and not letting people come in and make a declaration for asylum. That was the first of them. And then now there's been a series of, you know, protocols that make people wait for an appointment. Well, these people end up in tent cities, you know, with their lives very much in danger. They're subject to extortion, kidnapping. They've been robbed. I've met people who have been raped, kidnapped, stabbed, shot. You know, northern Mexico is not a place of safety. And so they're in a very precarious situation. Many of these kids who are going to be at the border gate in our event next week have been in waiting in Mexico, northern Mexico, for over a year, you know, with their lives in danger for that period of time since we've put these Remain in Mexico policies in place.
Shameful. It's hard to believe we're even talking about this. It's just unbelievable. Hopefully this will not go on for much longer. In the meantime, where do we go to participate in any sense, either to watch the streaming or to support otherwise?
Yeah, and we'd encourage all listeners to do so. They can visit our website, catholicextension.org/children. And they'll find all the instructions for how to join the live stream or any other information they want to learn about asylum seekers at the border.
Okay. Repeat that website again, please.
No problem. CatholicExtension.org/children.
Excellent. Joe, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate that. Dr. Brendan Stiles joins us. He's a surgeon at New York Presbyterian Hospital and associate professor surgery at Weill Cornell Medicine. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Ron. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Pleasure to have you here. Let me ask you some questions here. We're talking about cancer diagnoses. I understand that the numbers have gone down significantly since the pandemic. It sounds like a good thing, is it?
Yeah, you're right, Ron. Ordinarily, we'd be shouting that from the rooftop that we've got this incredible decrease in cancer diagnoses. Unfortunately, that's not the situation now. We know that this is the result of the COVID-19 pandemic. We're seeing decreases that are well beyond anything we could ever expect from screening or routine diagnoses. Decreases up to 50% in 2019 in the early going, and now still over 30% decreases in new cancer diagnoses. That's probably from people not getting screened or not seeking care due to the COVID pandemic.
I would assume that when we're talking about screening, I mean, many cancers are discovered during routine blood tests, et cetera. I assume breast cancer runs under that category where mammograms are supposed to take place on a regular basis, but probably have not.
That's right, Ron. We've got screening for lots of cancers in breast, colorectal, lung, even upper GI cancers, gastric, and esophageal. And a lot of those screenings aren't happening. In some cases, that may be appropriate to push back screening. But I think we want to not lose sight of the big picture. We've made incredible progress in cancer and earlier diagnosis and survival rate. And we don't want to lose that now because everybody stays away from the screener. Everybody stays away from the doctor.
Yeah. I guess the basic question that a person would have is it indeed safe to be screened at this point? Obviously, at the beginning of this whole thing, we weren't sure if that was a good idea or not. We wanted to stay away from people. Now we kind of understand a bit more about the situation. Is it indeed safe to go to a testing site and to be tested?
That's a great point, Ron. And I really think there's two situations. One is routine screening, and then the other is getting a workup for symptoms. Mm-hmm. I think for screening, I think it is safe right now. I think a lot of that's done in an outpatient setting. There's lots of safeguards in place to protect patients. That's probably a discussion to have with your doctor, though, about is it the right time to be screened? What should I expect? Is this the year that I could maybe push off? I think the other area, though, is early symptoms. And a lot of these early symptoms of cancer can be confused with symptoms of COVID. Certainly, if you have any symptoms, weight loss, fatigue, difficulty breathing, shortness of breath, just sort of chronic not feeling well, those types of things should be evaluated and not just attributed to COVID.
I suppose. COVID's got a lot of symptoms that are possible here in varying degrees is the confusing part. I don't know anybody who's over 50 or 60 years old who doesn't get a little short of breath going up the stairs. I mean, it's hard to gauge whether it's something to look at or whether this is just, I mean, I know I have pain in my shoulder sometimes. I think it's just getting older arthritis. I don't know.
Yeah, but Ron, it's really the onset of sort of new things, right? I'm not talking about the day-to-day symptoms that everybody has. It's if you sense a change, it's certainly worth talking to your doctor about that.
Okay.
And in many ways, it's never been easier. A lot of places have telemedicine established. You can just sort of get online and you can speak to your doctor. I think people need to be careful about self-diagnosis during this time. There's a lot of different things going on, a lot of potential things out there. Yeah. The system has slowed down. That can lead to a lot of delays.
Yeah. Let's talk about self-diagnosis and not even about the COVID right now. Since the onslaught of medical sites or quasi-medical sites on the internet, everybody's self-diagnosing. Before they call their doctor, they go to the internet and the first thing that pops up, whoever pays the most for the ad or the spot, will be the authority. And we go by that. I think that's even more discussable than the COVID because that seems, am I wrong, but has that been a real switch in who you go to?
It's definitely been a switch. And I think you can argue both sides of the coin. We obviously want to have educated patients, patients who know about their potential diseases, what's going on. On the other hand, you're right, it really has opened the floodgates and everybody sort of thinks that they have everything. Again, I would sort of emphasize that ticks it back. It's something that's really challenging to do, but but doctors, hospital systems are all set up to do it. You know, screening responsibly, doing diagnostic procedures responsibly is really the key. Hospitals right now aren't going to be able to run patients through every single test that they might have done. I think in many ways that's a good thing. We've realized that we can be a little bit more lean.
Yeah.
We don't have to get every test on every patient.
Yeah.
And I think that the risk of overdiagnosis is fairly low. At the same time, there's been some estimates that we may see a spike of tens of thousands of cancer-related deaths if we continue at this decreased rate of cancer diagnosis.
Yeah. All right. So I guess the bottom line is talk to your doctor or whoever you deal with and ask questions. And certainly the blood test should continue. I mean, that's one-on-one. That's safe enough. But people aren't even doing that.
I think routine health maintenance, and we're not just talking about cancer, we're talking about heart disease, high blood pressure, all those things. Really important to sort of stay in tune with those things and keep on track with your health.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, where do we go for more information?
There are lots of different great sites out there. There's one, newnormalsamecancer.com, that describes some of the relationship between COVID and cancer.
Mm-hmm.
For lung cancer specifically, there's a site from the Lung Cancer Research Foundation that talks about lung cancer diagnosis and COVID.
Okay. Very good. I mean, let me just interject, and I'm sure you agree with me. This is a great time for someone to get healthy. I mean,
it is. You know, it's tough to get out and exercise and go to gyms and things like that, but it's a good time to really start thinking about your health for sure.
It really is. Thank you so much for your time today, Doctor. Dr. Bob Arnott joins us now. We're going to be talking about pain management. He's an expert in the field, and this we're going to discuss it. I'm confused about pain management. I know that as people get older, that becomes a part of their daily life. It accounts for many visits to their health expert. I assume that this is something that you hear about frequently.
What is, you know, it's interesting to be confused because you go into the pharmacy and it's just sort of a blizzard of all kinds of different products.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder where to start. And my motto, you know, really has been for years, think topical first. And by topical, it means something you put on the pain as opposed to something you're taking by mouth.
Huh.
And there are two major organizations that now have come out strongly behind that. The American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Family Physicians, they recommend it. They represent about 300,000 doctors, and they strongly recommend, on very, very good evidence, that when patients have acute pain, back pain but not low back, any kind of musculoskeletal injury, you know, you bang your back, as an example, you know, you bang your leg, you fall down, it hurts, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have, you know, some arthritis of your knee, this wear and tear arthritis, then it's called a topical monsteroidal anti-inflammatory drug, which is a mouthful, but it really means, you know, the NSAIDs that we take by mouth, by the ibuprofens and whatnot, that class of drug is now in a topical formulation, one you can put on as a patch or a gel. And that's with or without menthol. And I love it because, you know, as physicians, we always say first do no harm. And the harm you can do with a pill is, like, for instance, ibuprofen. There are 15,500 deaths a year from that, from heart attack and stroke and stomach bleeds, as an example. Even acetaminophen, which seems so simple and so innocent, there are 450 deaths. And so, you know, these medications that we take by mouth, you know, are not innocent. And the great thing about a topical medication is that, you know, it goes directly down into the pain area, and there's very little that actually gets into the bloodstream. So that's why I've always been in love with it. I use it. I should say a quick aside. I for years have done this gruesome race in Hawaii from Molokai to Oahu. It's 7 hours, waves that some years can be as high as 25 feet tall, swells. They break. You have winds from 25 to 37 knots from all kinds of directions. And believe me, it's the most painful experience in the world. One year I took five ibuprofens, and I had the worst gastritis. You know, sick to my stomach all the way over. I felt terrible. The next year, I used a topical formulation. You may have seen them, you know, in the drugstores, the salon paws, pain patches, pain patch large. I stuck them on my knees and my back, and believe it or not, having fallen off dozens of times into a roiling open ocean, they stayed on. I felt great, and I had no side effects. So I think, you know, you mentioned older patients, and it's so important is, you do get older and you have hypertension,
sure,
and diabetes.
Arthritis, yeah.
Yeah, you have all those, and you may be taking a lot of different medications. And, mm-hmm, you know, as a physician, we're loathe to give someone yet another medication that they need to take by mouth, which is why, you know, I for years have been an advocate of this, and now these two amazing organizations are really sort of, you know, joined the cause here in terms of recommending with very strong evidence that patients consider first topical pain therapy. Mm.
What about bruises and things like that? Is that dangerous to absorb into an area that is trying to heal itself?
You know, it's such a good question because obviously if you take a medication and you put it over an area that's bleeding, as an example, uh-huh, there, of course, you know, would be absorption of that product,
right,
you know, through the skin. So you don't want to do bleeding. You know, bruising really depends. You know, if it's a light bruise, uh-huh, and the skin isn't macerated, uh-huh, mashed up and whatnot, you, uh-huh, could do that. I would say, of course, in a circumstance like that, you know, always talk to your doctor. But if I have a bruise, and I said, I that was my mountain bike the other day, and the tires were blown up. I was going up a hill, and it rolled over, and I had to have 18 stitches put into my lower leg, and I had all kinds of bruising. I put the patch over the bruising, and it worked pretty well. But yes, the only proviso is if you do have any kind of, you know, open bleeding, you don't want to put anything onto open bleeding,
right,
unless, of course, it's under the supervision of the physician.
Now, does something like Salonpas, let's say, as an example, if you use that, do you ice it as well, or is the medication inside of that patch, is that also taking care of that?
So that's an excellent question. You know, the first 24 hours after an injury, mm-hmm, icing is a great idea. You know, because what you're looking at two different mechanisms of action. You know, the Salonpas is going to be wonderful in terms of having this NSAID-like drug in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually methylsalicylate. And what that does is it takes the pain pathway that is creating all of these pain substances underneath the skin, and it damps that down,
mm-hmm,
so that you have less of that product being produced. However, you're still going to have swelling.
Right.
And that swelling is best, as you already indicated there, addressed by having an ice pack on it.
Yeah.
I always have them before, just in case, putting an ice,
sure,
pack on the elevator.
Sure. Feels
good. They have that slogan about, you know, elevation and icing and rest, rice, I think they call it. So you want to do that in addition. But
right,
sure, in terms of getting at the core cause of that pain, because what's so interesting is that under skin we have, it's like a, you know, telephone pole with all these receptors on it that receives the pain signal, and that grows almost like a Christmas tree in terms of, you know, no lights at all on it, and then suddenly all these lights lighting up, and you can slow that process of making those chemicals if you have the ingredients that are in the Salonpas large.
Well, I mean, it makes more sense that if you have pain somewhere to deal directly with the location of that pain. When you're taking something orally, it's kind of doing the whole body. It's not going like right to your knee or anything. So it makes more sense. It certainly does.
And what's so important about that point you just made is the critical point is that, you know, if I have a particular kind of drug, an NSAID as we call it, ibuprofen, and I put it in my stomach, where does that go? There's my, my brain, liver, heart, lungs, blood vessels. But if I put it directly on it, you're getting the vast majority of the drug going to the pain. So you shortcut that whole circuit, which gets more drug to the area, and it also shortcuts the side effects.
Well, at least you're saying, which makes sense, that should be the first line of defense, so to speak. That's where you go to first.
You know, there's a slogan to walk away with this morning. Yes, think topical first.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. I think I can remember that. I think with all the things I have to remember, I think I can remember that one. Where do I go for more information, doctor?
There's a great site. I use it myself. It's called salonpas.us. A lot of people put .com in it. It's not that. It's .us, like the United States.
Yep.
Salonpas.us, and it's all right there.
Gotcha. Hey, thanks for the information today. Good to talk to you.
Hey, great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Great insights. Appreciate it.
Great. You take care.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Ron. How are you?
I'm doing great. Dr. Stephen Knuff joins us now. He is the executive director of the Chiropractic and Compliance at the Joint Chiropractic. And we're talking about keeping yourself in shape joint-wise. It's a problem. I don't know if it's just me, but all of a sudden, within the past few years, maybe 5 years, everybody's talking about their back, how they hurt the back or their joints hurt, or something like that. I don't know if it's coincidence, but I mean, are we actually like not really doing things right here?
Yeah, I mean, it's made worse actually with COVID-19. So health experts, even prior to the pandemic, were saying that we should be moving around or being active about 150 minutes a week. I mean, if you break that down, Ron, that's like just over 20 minutes, and it seems like that would be the easiest thing to achieve. In reality, the CDC says only about 25% of us were doing that before the pandemic.
Wow.
Now you layer in, this work from home environment, and we're stuck in front of our computers, we're laying in bed, then at the end of the day, we get in front of Netflix and we binge watch some shows, and we forget to move. And early studies are saying that we're getting worse at it, and it's becoming a real issue, and it's leading to these back issues, pain, it can be headaches, and it's making us all feel older, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's kind of like the carpal tunnel of today, even though it's...
That's it.
Yeah, no way. Yeah, I mean, I found myself walking more when this whole thing started, and I guess, is walking good for the back?
Yeah, you know, especially if you sit during your day for long periods, which, you know, many of us do.
We all do. We always did.
Yeah, that's it. So just getting up, walking around, setting a timer is sometimes helpful for people. Doing it in the morning, just getting into a routine. Maybe you have a spouse or a significant other that you just, that's how you get your day going and you commit to that together. Sometimes it's easier with a partner. But moving is a huge part. The other part of, you know, avoiding, you know, feeling like you're 80 when you're 40 is just your posture and sitting up straight. Yeah. End of the day, your grandma was probably your first chiropractor and telling you to sit up straight all the time. That's right. But it is really effective for helping keep some of that stuff away.
That's a conscious effort to constantly remind yourself to stand up straight. Everybody else tells me too. I mean, I'm 6 foot three. I think I'm innately have that problem. I mean, is it true that the taller you are, the more you really should pay attention to this, or is this hit everybody?
This is like an everybody thing, and you might actually be surprised. It's far worse in the younger generation than it had previously.
Really?
I mean, if you think about it, what does everyone have in their pockets? It's their cell phone.
Yes.
And if you watch them throughout the day, when you look at them on their cell phone, they're just hunched over that thing.
Yep.
I mean, you're turning into like a Quasimodo at that point, and it wears on your back and your neck, and it just causes terrible posture. So it's not a height thing necessarily, but it affects everyone.
Are there any tips that you can give us as we go through these socially awkward, ridiculous days? Any tips? Should a television be high over the mantle if you have it mounted? Should a screen be, what are some tips as far as we're stuck in this way of life? How can we at least do it properly?
You already started to touch on a couple of them, Ron. The first one is your ergonomic setup, right?
Yeah.
Ergonomics, that's kind of been a buzzword lately. But ideally, your screen is eye level or higher for you, so that your neck and your head aren't looking down.
Okay.
Your head isn't going forward. Over a long period of time, that position can cause some pretty intense headaches. So if you're someone who's having headaches pretty frequently, I mean, just think about your setup, where your screens are, and maybe just start to play around with it and make some adjustments. So you hit that one on the head.
Okay.
The other one is really you know, getting not working in your bed or on your couch, right? Because many of us are working from home, mm-hmm. and some of us want to just be in a place that's comfortable,
right?
Like our bed or couch, but that's not meant to be sat in for 7, 8, 9 hours in a day, mm-hmm. and it can really put you in terrible positions. That just make you feel your body yeah. feel terrible.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, it's your surroundings, it's your ergonomics, it's and then it's moving. Just making time to move, walk. It's easy, but it's hard to practice.
Yeah. A lot of us wake up in the morning with back pain because it's the phrase is you slept wrong. I don't know how you can do that wrong, but I guess you can. Is that because indeed it's mattress problems or position, or is it because we are so lazy during the day and don't exercise that we're more vulnerable to back pain simply from sleeping because of that?
Yeah, great question. It's something that we get from our patients all the time, mm-hmm. as a question. Like, is there a mattress that we recommend or mm-hmm. a pillow? Mm-hmm. Like there's some kind of magic bullet out there that you'll wake up feeling refreshed every morning, which yeah. I wish was the case, but it really varies by person. You know, it depends on your medical history too. If you've been in a car accident or had True. Some kind of trauma, you might need a different kind of mattress based on maybe some previous injuries that you've had to your neck or
Isn't
your back.
That true?
So that varies from person to person. Certainly being able to move around during move the around. Day mm-hmm. or stretch, you set yourself up for better sleep that way, yeah. for sure.
Isn't it interesting that with back pain, as you mentioned, you could have been in a car accident or fell down like 10, 20 years ago, and then all of a sudden, later in life, you got back problems. That might be a result of something that happened earlier in life, actually, huh?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, our bodies need constant upkeep. Yeah. I mean, if you think about any healthy habit, you want to get in shape, you just can't go to the gym once and look amazing. Mm-hmm. It takes time and it takes repetition. Same thing with eating healthy, mm-hmm. losing weight. Mm-hmm. Same thing is true for your back health and your muscles.
Yeah.
Your body wants to deteriorate, so you need to keep it up. You need to do things to keep yourself healthy,
yeah.
getting those routines.
Yeah. Well, anybody who's had back pain before in their life knows how you really should start taking care of that, because that is excruciating when it becomes chronic. We're running a little short of time. How do we get more information about this?
Yeah, if you need more information, check out www.thejoint.com for more information and see if maybe chiropractic can help you out.
Great. This has been fascinating. I appreciate your time today. Well, there you have it. Some of it was informational. Some of it was medical. Some of it was like, please buy my product. I don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, there you go. It's a show. We call it a show. That's a show. And I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show, a normal show, a regular show. Until then, well, I wish you peace.